Hi, I'm Yaakov Katz, and welcome to the Jewish People Policy Institute's Inside Analysis on the State of Affairs in Israel and the Jewish World. There is a lot to talk about as the war, obviously, in the Gaza Strip continues and another possible conflict looms in the north. But closer to home right now is the conflict or the tension that is growing between President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And we're going to try to analyze the situation and what's happening between Washington and Jerusalem today. I'm joined by three guests on this episode. The first is Tzvika Klein, the newly installed editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. So we're going to talk to Tzvika about what it's like running a newspaper during a time of war and, of course, how he views the ongoing and the tension between Israel and the United States, where he has readers on both sides of that spectrum. And then we're going to break down the situation between the United States and Israel with the help of two of JPPI's senior fellows and American experts, Shmuel Rosner and Gil Troy. Stay with us. Here we go. Tzvika Klein, it's great to have you with the JPPI podcast.
Hey, Yaakov, how are you in your old office?
I see it. It looks good. You've changed things around just a bit from what I can see. There's like some whiteboard back there.
Oh, there's a whiteboard. Yeah. So I look strategic.
Yeah. Well, you are strategic. So Tzvika, you've been now in this role for 3 months. Paper's looking great. Enjoy reading it every day. And I'm sure many of our listeners and followers do. But tell us, I mean, what is it like? Let's start with just the simple question. What's it like taking over a daily newspaper in the middle of a war?
So boots to fill or whatever, however you say it. I think I was a deputy editor, obviously, for 4 months before that. So basically, since October 7th, it's like as if, like, I haven't had a day off. We just have been working. I kind of wrote about this a few times. I also, started working on Shabbat the first few weeks, not as much anymore, thank God. But, it's not easy. And also it's like, you want to, on the one hand, have original content, but like when they announced 20 people dead that day, like what original content are you going to give? Right. Like that's
right.
Just the news, right? Obviously, there's always an angle to give on what's going on, but like struggling to try and actually have our readers, most of our readers are, as you know, are outside of Israel, the understanding of what Israelis are going through, and it's not always an easy challenge.
And is that the goal is to an extent, obviously, to tell Israel's story and to tell the news as it's happening, but also to be this window for the outside world to better understand what's happening here?
Right, 100%. But at the same time, as I said, most of our readership is outside of Israel. And what's going on outside of Israel is, thank God it's less fatal, less people being killed. But Jews around the world are in this new situation, which we know usually happens when Israel is at war or operation, let's say, right? All the, previous operations, wars, there's always an increase in anti-Semitism, but never have we had such a long war and such a dramatic situation that has been affecting diaspora Jews so much. And I think, just like in Israel, in the polls at the moment, we see a majority voting for center-right, center-left parties. Mm-hmm. American Jews and diaspora Jews are also kind of slowly gearing towards the center. I actually see that as a positive thing, both in Israel and in the U.S., because like that tent, the American Jews like talking about a tent, right? But the tent of the mainstream Jewish community, I feel like is getting a bit bigger. In that sense.
In other words, people who are traumatized to some extent are looking for a place to call home?
Yeah, but also Israel being a dividing factor, becoming a unifying factor, as it was in the past, because, you know, you have the, you know, the religious, you know, Orthodox Jews or the politically conservative Jews who are, you know, very pro-Israel no matter what, kind of. And then the progressive Jews, many of which some were, some weren't, but feel betrayed by either, you know, the word I hear every like a few times a day is betrayed and betrayal, right? Like we have been betrayed by our natural partners, people who we fought with in the, you know, for civil rights and for equality, etc. They feel that these people are actually, you know, kind of, you know, either not speaking to them or speaking negatively about them just because they're Jewish, without them even saying anything about Israel. Some of them actually pretty negative about Israel, but suddenly are like, wait, because I'm Jewish, I'm singled out because of Israel, even though I have no connection to Israel. So what do I do? Should I learn about Israel? You know, I don't know. It's an interesting situation. And it'll be interesting to
which
see
maybe where actually creates an opportunity to increase Jewish education or Israel education and to start to, you know, arm people. I mean, one thing that I do.
Well, first of all, it's happening already.
Yeah.
Like there are schools or universities, like Yeshiva University, there's no room because people in private schools or public schools want, you know.
Right. But I mean, this is something, you know, to our listeners who might not know, Tzvika Klein is the preeminent diaspora affairs correspondent and analyst. I had the privilege of hiring him away from Macquarie Show and bringing him to the Jerusalem Post, what, about 2 years ago now? And it was something that I started speaking to Tzvika about 10 years ago. So I'm glad, or something like that. So I'm glad we were able to finally make it happen.
I wish I would run marathons. Mm-hmm. I don't, maybe you do, but like, you know, it's like a marathon. We're in it for the long term.
But yeah. But my point is that that's true. But the one thing that I say to, like, you know, Jewish groups or like parents, grandparents, like, what can we do? How could we fix the situation? I'm like, do you educate your own kids? Do they know enough about the issues? And the answer I think we both know is that they don't. Right. Mm-hmm. So if they did, you know, before we go and make demands of the non-Jews, who we should make demands of, right, we should also get our own story right.
Yeah, 100%. I think also this relates to kind of your beat or your kind of specialty is, I think the IDF, on the one hand, the IDF is the only kind of, the IDF spokesperson's unit is the only like solid, stable, relevant spokes unit or whatever of the country, okay, during this war. But at the same time, is not using its intelligence and information to convince people around the world, as well as, you know, Jews and whatever, about what's going on. Because on the one hand, you have people who are quote unquote starving or dying from hunger in Gaza, and then we're like exposing these tunnels, right? So that makes it very difficult for, you know, an American Jew who hasn't been to the army and isn't, you know, I don't know, into like military stuff or I don't know what, like to relate to this when the military, you know, IDF actually has, whether it more footage about what happened October 7th or even just intelligence information about what's going on in Gaza and how Hamas is really a terrible organization and with neo-Nazi kind of vibes and education system that's, you know, that promotes this type of behavior. We're not using that. They're not doing that. And then therefore we're kind of, you know, how are we to expect these Jews who don't know enough, as you said, right, a lot of them, to actually support us?
So Tzvika, when you look at the Israel diaspora divide, which has long been an issue of something that you've written about, right? How is that changing in a way that maybe Israel can leverage it in a positive direction?
I mean, so as I mean, you said there's a huge opportunity here in so many ways. I personally wrote a column, and I believe that Israel should encourage Aliyah now. I think it's something that as a country, we don't usually do, it's not something the country does. Like a country doesn't encourage immigration, but you know, its proxies, you would say, or organizations on its behalf would do so. I think we really need Jews from around the world to come to Israel now. And as opposed to this narrative of like, oh, we're a high-tech nation, come work in Tel Aviv and go to the beach. We have that, yes. But if we're speaking a bit more deep, like we need more people to come to send their kids to the army, and we need people to be teachers as well as doctors and nurses. So like I would love to see them here. I don't think we're doing enough of that. But also I think I would take advantage of the fact that there's more of a positivity from the progressive side towards Israel more than there was, and try and connect them to Israel more. You know, I mean, the October 7th massacre, a large proportion of it was amongst these progressive Israelis, right? And these in kibbutzim, that, you know, people who are peace activists who gave rides to Gazan children who had cancer to Israeli hospitals. Those are the people who were slaughtered. And I think that's part of, I can't say positive, but part of the reason I think that the progressive Jewish community in America has been kind of woke up and you know, now rethinking where they're going, what they're doing.
I want to ask you about the tension right now between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu, which I know, you know, was the front page. Yeah, there's a little tension. There's a little tension. But it was you know, the top story in the Jerusalem Post today. It's been a story that you guys have been covering very carefully. You know, how do you see what Netanyahu, and I know that you have good connections over there in the Prime Minister's office. I mean, what is the angle that's going on?
What's the angle going on from their perspective?
Yes. How do you understand what is he trying to achieve here?
With the war, or with?
Well, no. With the tension with President Biden.
I mean, I think it's all about. I mean, it's a stupid game. It's a stupid game of, you know, we had this exclusive yesterday that, you know, Netanyahu's people were saying, you know, to us that it was actually Netanyahu's idea to have that, which, you know, actually may be true. And, you know,
the floating port or whatever it's called. Yeah.
Floating port outside of Gaza, bringing it through Cyprus, etc. Something that actually Foreign Minister Israel Katz has thought of like years and years ago, which is, you know, surprising and interesting. So it's just about, it's this like egotistical battle where on the one hand Biden has an election, and that's not very positive for us at the moment because of, you know, because he was perceived to be too pro-Israel, and then Netanyahu trying to move him back to be more supportive, but obviously with that behavior it's just not going to work. So I don't know. I mean, I think also Netanyahu is in survival mode, but that means just, you know, doing what he does, which is, you know,
surviving.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Nothing positive to update there.
So, Tzvika, I want to let you go and be cognizant of the fact that you do have a newspaper to run. But when you look to the day after this war, what are some of the things that you think journalists or the media can do to continue? Because we know, for example, you just mentioned the traffic. Traffic is up. Engagement is up. People are looking. What can be done after?
By the way, in all Jewish websites.
Yeah, I would assume all Jewish, all Israeli websites. What can be done to keep that engagement going?
That's a great question. And journalists love when people tell them that it's a great question. I'll tell you why. Because you and I are like these, like me more than you are, like we're the Jewish media nerds type of thing. That's what I call it. And so most of the Jewish outlets around the world are not very strong or very, you know, financial, etc. And therefore, most of them didn't have anybody physically in Israel. So they actually had to send people here or to hire freelancers in order to cover Israel, which is essential, which is like a major part of a Jewish identity. Now, on the same, something that I've been saying for years, like preaching to the choir here at least, but Israeli media doesn't cover, Hebrew media doesn't cover diaspora the way it should. It just covers it when there's like anti-Semitism, and there's lots of it now, so we're hearing about it. But we're not, we need to have that other direction of Israeli media telling the story of what's going on in these Jewish communities, because there's nothing about what happened after October 7th that is normal. Like, we're used to having these American Jews or Jews around the world donate and come here and whatever. There's nothing normal about that. Like, it's an amazing phenomena. And we shouldn't just let it go by and say, okay, they actually, like, Jews around the world raised billions of shekel, if not more, and have been fighting for Israel and doing things for Israel, coming in to visit here. So we kind of are moved when we see it, and we are moved when they're killed in Pittsburgh in a synagogue, but we don't really know
Right.
are what they are. So hopefully, like, media outlets will be able to shift. I think definitely the Jewish ones will. Israeli ones, probably not.
But there is engage there, there's increased engagement, and that's going to be your challenge as to how to keep that going. And I'm confident you'll figure it out, Zvika.
Hopefully. Listen, this is like, instead of me calling you and asking you a bunch of questions, we just did it here for,
We just sit here for about 20 minutes. Zvika Klein, editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Yaakov.
That was a great interview with Zvika Klein. And Gil, I'll start with you. Looking at what Joe Biden in his interview, I think it was on NBC on Saturday night, where he basically comes out and says that Netanyahu, and I might be missing the exact quote, but is causing more damage to his people than good. Netanyahu, of course, snaps back, gives an interview to The Bild and also to Politico, the same Axel Springer organization, and basically says, well, the president is mistaken, right? The president is wrong. If we thought that there was tension under the surface, well, it's come out for everybody to see now.
Yes, and it's quite disturbing, partially because it puts Bibi back into his Bibi spot. Bibi loves being in the position where he's standing up against the great American beast, and he then plays to his audience, and it reinforces his base, and we go right back to the Bibi Obama wars. And that's not what we need at this moment. What we need at this moment is leadership. What we need at this moment is statesmanship. What we need at this moment is vision. And we've got two leaders who are caught. Joe Biden is, as we saw in the State of the Union, on the one hand, in the State of the Union, he was as vigorous and as spontaneous as we've seen him in a long, long time, but he's worried. He's insecure. And when he gets insecure, he plays to his progressive base. When he gets insecure, he worries about Dearborn, Michigan. And what? They're going to start voting for Donald Trump in November? He starts worrying about the uncommitted voters who said during some of the primaries on Super Tuesday that we're not happy and essentially with your Israel stance. So he's panicking and he puts more pressure on Bibi. Bibi, rather than thinking what's best for the country, starts getting into these power games with the United States of America. And the problem is that we have, as you suggested, two hot borders. We still have work to do in the South. And many, many Israelis I know are asking, what is taking so long? Why are you dithering over Rafiq and just letting the international pressure grow and grow and grow? And we have, what, 80,000, 85,000 people in the North who have been displaced. And we have this kind of cold war with skirmishes back and forth day after day. That is an untenable situation. That's what they should be focusing on. How do we solve that problem? And also, how do we get humanitarian aid to Gaza? Not these ego battles between two old men.
So, Shmuel, I'll just laugh one more time at that. But that was a nice description. Shmuel, is it politics? Is that what I mean? Is it that Biden is really that worried about Dearborn, Michigan, and about the progressive flank of his party? Or is there something deeper here? Is there a frustration with Netanyahu, who they feel is not is prioritizing political survival, his right-wing coalition, his Itamar Ben-Gvir Bezalel Smotrich partnership and not the good of the country, which would be articulate what you want to see happen, work with us, say those God forbid two words, Palestinian Authority, which Netanyahu can't bring himself to say. What is it more, or is it really just hard, cold politics?
Well, first of all, I'd like to give President Biden some credit and believe that this is not just politics. Politics is certainly part of the equation, and the timing is telling in that sense. You know, we enter the election year and we suddenly see this shift in the tone of the United States leadership. But I assume it's not just about politics. It's also about the continuation of the war and the number of people killed in Gaza that is growing and is of more concern to the US or to the international community. And also what you mentioned, the issue of the day after, the fact that the Israeli government is not quite responsive when the Americans are telling them, well, let's discuss what's coming after the war, whether we can talk about a two-state solution, a regional arrangement, diplomatic processes, and all kinds of other things. I'd like to say that, you know, we often look at statements of such leaders and we ask ourselves, well, is Biden right or Bibi right? And the answer can be they're both right. Biden can be right in his argument that Bibi is causing more harm than good to Israel in some way. And Bibi is right to argue that Biden is mistaken if he thinks that the war is some private affair conducted by Netanyahu. The war is not a private affair. The IDF is not Bibi's war machine, as Senator Sanders described it. The IDF is fighting a war on behalf of all Israelis. Israelis, and again, this is the paradox that we have to come to terms with. Israelis, by and large, do not have high regard for the prime minister right now. His approval rating is low, about as low as President Biden's approval rating in the United States. On the other hand, the support of Israelis to the war effort is very high. And the fact that Biden is trying to create this situation as if the war is Bibi's war and he can separate the Israeli people or Israeli citizens from the Israeli government, it is true that there are many differences between the government and the people, and there are many disagreements within Israel, and there are many people in Israel who do not support the current government. However, when it comes to the war, Biden is completely mistaken. The war is supported by Israelis. The aims of the war, the determination of the government to have victory in Gaza, this is something that Israelis did not give up on. And if Biden wants them to give up on this, I think it'll be a lost cause.
By the way, I think it seems from what's come out from the meetings that Benny Gantz held in Washington is that he pretty much made that clear to them, that if the Americans thought that there was some difference between the prime minister and the more centrist partner within his war cabinet, he saw that on the Americans saw that on the issue of Rafah or on the issue of the war, it wouldn't be done much differently.
If you go to Israeli leaders and ask them about Rafah, I assume that all leaders, yeah, Smotrich, Netanyahu, Gantz, Bennett, Lieberman, even Yair Golan on the left, Yair Lapid, all of them will say that going into Rafah is essential for Israel's war effort.
Even though we've been hearing about this for the last month or so, and we still have yet to step foot into Rafah, but that's a separate question, whether that is being something that's being used as a bargaining chip to try to pressure Hamas into a hostage deal, which I venture to think that probably is what's happening. But Gil, I as we kind of look at this tension, and one of the things that came up in the NBC interview with the president was he was asked about these rumors or reports that he might be contemplating coming to Jerusalem and giving a speech at the Knesset. And I was laughing watching that. And he wouldn't deny them. And I was saying, okay, Biden's going to do a BB to BB. Basically what BB did to Obama back in 2015, going to Congress, giving the speech against the nuclear accord, Biden, this is like the sweetest comeback, right? Or payback.
So first, I think we have to go back to the State of the Union. Two very important things happened in the State of the Union. One was that he devoted quite a large chunk of time, about 5 minutes of his speech, to Israel and the situation in Gaza. But he started by saying, I will never abandon Israel. And with all our criticisms of Biden, we should emphasize that the munitions continue to flow. And you, Yaakov, have written so eloquently about how important it is that those munitions continue to flow. So we have to put that there. But secondly, he spent more time talking about the humanitarian situation and putting pressure on Israel. And then there was a back and forth in what they call a hot mic moment, where he was caught basically saying, oh yeah, I'm going to have a come to Jesus meeting with Bibi. And that was the tee up for the MSNBC interview. And I think that's important because there is a lot of growing frustration in America. And I think Shmuel is absolutely right that there's much less distance between the Israeli public and the IDF effort, and even where the government is in Israel, than what's going on, not only just within the American community, but also in the American Jewish community. And that's also a very important warning sign that we have to look at. And part of the reason why is because there's this perfect storm. I'm calling it like a sanctimony cyclone, where the media is playing up the genuine horrors in Gaza. And every one of us worries about what's happening to Gazans. Every one of us mourns the innocent children and women killed. Every one of us doesn't want our kids in a situation where their souls are destroyed by what they see and what they are forced to do. But every one of us here in Israel understands that there's a bigger picture, and that these are civilians who are being exploited, and their misery is being leveraged by Hamas. Whereas in the United States of America, and again, even within the American Jewish community, every day they're bombarded by these images. And these are images that they didn't see when America was doing much worse in Afghanistan or Iraq. These are images that they didn't see when much worse deaths were taking place, and destruction was taking place, and famine were taking place in Yemen. And it's become this kind of cyclone of sanctimony. And that's very, very hard to stop. And that's why you also had 600 American rabbis writing to Joe Biden saying ceasefire, barely mentioning the conflict in the north and talking about the conflict in the north as if it's this weather system rather than something that was started by Hezbollah. And one of the things we need in Israel is for the American Jewish community to stand up strong and be as crazy as Dearborn, be as one-sided as Dearborn, be as clear as Dearborn, and saying this is an existential crisis here. We have enemies north and south who are threatened.
Yeah, but Gil, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the Jews aren't like that in America.
I've noticed. I said what they should do. I didn't say what they will do.
If you didn't get the memo.
But you know what? But part of the thing is, first of all, there are Jews who are struggling, right? This has been an interesting moment, and there's some shift going on. But indeed, what we're seeing much more is a kind of quiet on the part of those who are with Israel increasingly. And more and more voices. Look at the Oscars last night. The Oscar-winning director, Jonathan Glazer of Zone of Interest, refuted his Judaism.
Yeah. By the way, can someone explain to me what that means? What does that mean, I refute my Judaism? Are you denying that you're Jewish? Are you returning your Jew? Like, what does that mean, I refute my Jewishness? I don't understand.
And he actually read the speech, and the speech was incoherent. But all we got was that, I'm really not into being Jewish, and it's all because of the occupation.
Oh, and no, but also the occupation is because of the Holocaust, right? It's all connected. Yeah,
right, right. It's all right, and it was just in its simplicity, and in its ignorance, it actually showed where too much of the very sophisticated American Jewish community is going, and that's why we really need a pushback on the part of our leaders in the American Jewish community, who I know care, who have been coming to Israel, who have been donating, who have been moving heaven and earth. But they've got to get more political, and they've got to get more aggressive.
So, Shmuel, I mean, you know, I want to leave kind of with this final thought and question is, the world sees what's happening. I mean, you know, to me, I'm of the belief, and I just wrote a piece about this past weekend, of how important and vital the relationship is between Israel and the United States. And if you look at it just in practical military terms, I mean, we need them, right? We need help, and we can't wage these wars. Definitely, God forbid, if there's going to be one in the north, and based on 100 plus so rockets that were fired by Hezbollah yesterday, I mean, something here has to change. This is not good. And I wonder, if Hezbollah is not escalating to some extent, because they're noticing that there's this wedge now and this tension between Israel and the United States. And they're saying, hey, Biden's going to tie Israel's hands. Israel doesn't have America's support. This is a time for us to take advantage. There are real life consequences to this fight between Bibi and Biden.
I have no doubt that these statements by President Biden are an obstacle to Israel's war effort. They are causing Hamas to strengthen his position and becoming more, be more tough in the negotiations over the hostages. It is hinting to Hezbollah that they can keep firing rockets at Israel because Israel's hands are tied by the United States. And although I believe that President Biden himself believes that he is a true friend of Israel, I think what he's doing right now is not quite being a friend. Let me dwell on one thing that he said during the interview, which I thought was highly disturbing. At some point he said, there are other ways to deal with Israel's trauma from October 7th, as if what we are doing now is a psychological type analysis. We are going through this healing process that we need to complete. This is something about our souls and not about our security. President Biden needs to get back to where he started the war. This is a war for survival of Israel. This is not about our psychological state of mind. This is not about the trauma or about healing. It is about keeping us safe and showing all the enemies that we have, enemies and potential enemies, that things such that occurred on October 7th cannot happen again. And as long as President Biden is, if he's moving to this arena of, let's heal, let's find some way, some other way to deal with the trauma rather than let's be tough and strategic in thinking about the situation. This is where he's causing, he told us that Bibi is a problem for Israel, which might be true. He's not a problem, but he's the president of the United States. So we have to find a way to communicate with him and explain to him why the war must continue.
Thank you for joining us today. You can find all our episodes where you get your podcasts. Please share widely and give us a 5-star review. We will see you back here soon.